empathy can take you down the road of looking at exactly what that person's done and wishing that you had it or trying to emulate it. Whereas what you need to do is say, what's my best version of that thing? How could I do that thing in a way that's authentic to me?
From To Be Magnetic, this is the Expanded Podcast with your host, Lacey Phillips. As the leading destination for neural manifestation, we dispel the woo-woo in order to help you create real, tangible results based on neuroplasticity, psychology, epigenetics, and energetics. Our goal is to normalize the practice of manifestation and empower you to get into the driver's seat of your life in order to manifest the experiences, relationships, and things that most align with your authenticity. Part of our manifestation process entails expanding past your limiting subconscious beliefs. Therefore, by tuning into this podcast with interviews from experts, thought leaders, spiritual teachers, scientists, and those with neural manifestation success stories, you're starting the process of expanding your subconscious in order to see to believe that anything you desire is possible. And by pressing play, the process begins. So this month, we kick off the theme of jealousy, envy, expansion. And so far this year, we've all gone through inner child and love together. And each couple of months, we're going to break to give a very specific focus on the daily practice, which if you're not familiar with the pathway into Be Magnetic work, we have our very own hypnosis process that helps you reprogram and achieve your neural manifestations. And that's called the daily practice. And so very specifically, we've created a brand new deep imagining, which is code for our hypnosis, which is titled Envy and Jealousy. This one comes up more than you would think or more than you pinpoint in your life, especially the envy piece. And as you'll hear us define inside of this episode, jealousy is when you're in fear of losing what you have. So say you're in a partnership and you're in fear of losing your partner. The triggered feeling you'll feel when they are around a new potential love interest or somebody that threatens you in any capacity, what's coming up for you in that moment is jealousy. However, envy is witnessing something that somebody else has, embodies, or is successful in that you want. Therefore, what we teach very deeply in this episode is that you are actually experiencing an expander. And as you've been learning through all of the explained episodes, integrating through jealousy or expanding through envy are such incredible roadmaps of how to get to your magnetism. Because you're literally, again, I think I'll keep saying this until I'm blue in the face, you're being mirrored with what needs to be unblocked directly with what you're calling in. Even if they look like they're not connected, they are. The universe always sends you the exact mirrors to show you, please unblock this. What you want is orbiting you right now. If you can unblock this and expand and pass tests and be in your worth, I can connect you with your manifestation. So that's why really digging into our practice, really getting into the habit of unblocking through the daily practice is so key. And that's our goal throughout this entire month, is building a true practice. If you have yet to experience the new daily practice, which has 7 videos going through and explaining all of the science and how it works, please watch that first. Don't let that daunt you and push you away. You can just go check out this new DI, but definitely get through the whole thing so you understand why this practice continually is so important in order to unblock those mirrors that are coming at you so that you can connect with what's actually orbiting you. So there are a couple of two little teachings that I really want to pinpoint as we go through this episode, as we go through this month, and we really nail down our daily practice habit. That's the whole point of this month, with a specific interest. It doesn't mean every time you go into do the daily practice, you have to focus on envy, jealousy, expansion. We're just really trying to build that habit together in community and inside the Pathway member group, where we can hold each other accountable, ask questions. We can certainly tune in inside there or on social media at To Be Magnetic to hear the coaches teaching new tools to go along with it. But the two things I want to bring to your attention, whenever you're feeling envy, at the very end of this episode, we give a great little roadmap and a link to an old blog article that will tell you so specifically how to navigate it and channel that energy into an expander so that you're literally creating space in your subconscious mind for your manifestations to come through. So that's one thing. The second thing I really want you to focus on when you're feeling jealousy, which is so normal. I've actually been feeling it quite a bit in the later parts of my pregnancy because of my hormones. There's a lot that will come up surrounding Max, which is really sweet. I've touched on this before. He's like, oh my gosh, I'm so flattered. It's like you think I'm a Casanova or something. And normally, typically not pregnant or not transitioning into this deeper vulnerability in our partnership, I tend to not have these types of feelings often. But one thing I really want you to focus on that's been so helpful for me, will be so helpful for you, and was helpful when I worked with clients, is when you're going through the daily practice and you come to the journal prompts. We have two journal prompts inside of the new daily practice. We have the reprogramming prompts, which is really rooting in on the exact point where you picked up a limiting belief and healing the emotion associated with it inside hypnosis, which are deep imaginings. We also have the reinforcing prompts, and these are much more day-to-day. And one of the steps that this journal prompt asks you to do, it's step three, it's called face. And what it asks is, what are the threats or fears? Write out and face the worst case scenario and how you could cope. And that is so powerful when you're working through jealousy, because it really allows you to see where your deepest threshold of strength actually lies and where your true safety lies. And we're not promoting jealousy here. A lot of this is integration, but what we are promoting is really starting to understand your autonomy and authenticity and magnetism in an effort to integrate in order to no longer have the triggers of jealousy come up for you in the way they did in the past, which usually comes through, in most cases, abandonment in childhood in some form or another, or neglect. So really, really focusing in on that reinforcing journal prompt section. Number three, face. What are the threats or fears? Write out and face the worst case scenario and how you could cope. And when envy triggers, tune into the very end of this episode where we give you that exercise of how to navigate it. And go check out the brand new Deep Imagining in the daily practice, again, titled Envy and Jealousy. All right, let's move into this explained. Welcome back to another explained episode, which has quickly become your favorite segment of the entire podcast, Expanded. In Explained, Dr. Tara Swart joins my co-host Jessica Gill and I in deep diving on specific themes within manifestation, which all of you love because it's where we bridge our process of manifestation with neuroscience and psychology and the deep science that anchors it all together. Back in July, Dr. Tara Swart joined us as our psychology and neuroscience advisor. And why we handpicked her, besides the fact that she's so unbelievably marvelous, she has a PhD in neuroscience and a former medical career as a psychiatrist of 7 years. She's also a senior lecturer and on faculty at MIT, no big deal, and senior lecturer at King's College. She's currently working on research projects on plasticity and epigenetics. She has Google Talks, LinkedIn, Facebook, and 2 TED Talks. She's also the author of 3 books, her latest being The Source. So let's get into another explained episode where Dr. Tara and I break down the energetics and science of manifestation, offering a roundtable perspective on the deep intricacies and connection. Here goes.
We Welcome back to another episode of Explained. I am so excited for today's topic and theme with Lacey and Dr. Tara. We are talking about jealousy, envy, and expansion. So I'll kick us off with a quote. If you're feeling envious of someone, it's because they're showing you what you're capable of. Turn your envy into inspiration. So through TBM and through Lacey, I really understood the definitions of the two, because for so long, I would say everything's jealousy, jealousy, this person's jealous, that's jealous, blah, blah, blah. And I really didn't understand the definition that fully. You know, I think when people see someone get the job they want, or they find their dream partner, or the life that they like, what they're actually doing a lot of the times is being envious. So just to break down those definitions, jealousy is the fear of losing something that you have, whereas envy is wanting something that someone else has. So let's break this down further. Lacey, first from a manifestation standpoint, and Dr. Tara from psychology and neuroscience, how can we really understand the difference between these two? And how did you come to these definitions, Lacey?
Yeah, so to me, they're energetic definitions. I don't know, Dr. Tara, you'll have to tell us if they also are definitions within psychology. But yeah, so the energetic difference is just that. When you think of being jealous, right, and you're, let's say you're in a relationship and you get really triggered and jealous of a coworker of your partner's, or somebody new in your partner's life, or something on TV that your partner sees. And usually that energetic is, oh, I'm afraid that I could lose, you know, this is from blocks that we picked up in childhood, that I could lose this current partner, I could lose this job, or I could lose this thing of security, is like the real underlining energetic. When we're afraid of losing a form of security that we have, or an identity that we have, that's when we tend to feel triggered with jealousy. And, you know, you can easily work through that. Not easily, but you can feel those feelings, and you have tools to work through that through the DI, whether it's a trigger DI. I mean, there's so many. I'll let Jessica list them off. We have so many now, and we have very, very excitingly created a whole new one for this. So that's exciting. And then actually the energetic of envy, which is really pertinent and powerful to manifestation. And rather than looking at it as a block, it's this beautiful mirror, a beautiful, painful mirror that's really illuminating to us and reflecting to us, wow, I really want what that person has or does or is successful in. If I look back at the most envious experiences I've had in my life, it's always amazing to see in hindsight, once I got the energetics correct, meaning that if we start to look at this trigger that's coming up, which is envy, witnessing something that someone else has, is successful in, or the various things, if we look at that, and we feel the feelings of like, oh, I'm so envious that that woman is so beautiful and she comes from so much wealth and whatever it is, you know, that that might be triggering us. Or maybe it's that person on social media that is traveling 360 days of the year and I'm stuck in, you know, a corporate job that I don't want to be in. When I started to recognize the energetic again and felt my feelings of being triggered, but then started to reframe it and realize, wow, universe, you're totally presenting me with an expander who's showing me. Otherwise, this person wouldn't be coming into my field, who is showing me and reflecting back to me that that exact thing in my own personal way is possible. And so when we start to actually use the energy to do that, and you know, you can find that in the link below, we have a great exercise on this. And you start to harness that energy and work with it after you've felt your feelings and you use it for expansion, it so quickens the process of A, discovering what your soul is really communicating it wants or needs, and B, starting to really expand your subconscious further to have space for it to come through. So it's actually really funny because if I look back, one of my friends who's in wellness, and we were pretty neck to neck a lot of the time with our brands and press and opportunities that were coming through. And she was actually one of the people that really, really helped me define the definition of expander. And any time that she would have this great opportunity come through that maybe I had been calling in for quite some time, but was behind her, and I would be envious, you know, it's just that natural human nature. And then I started to reframe and do the work around it. It was like a flash before that similar opportunity came through for me. So yeah, this is a really fun one to start breaking down today. I can't wait to hear more of the science and psychology behind it. But in terms of tackling it through manifestation, both are so approachable. Both are being mirrored so perfectly to you right now because you've been calling in something that directly connects to them, even if it's not super apparent. So like how I always give the example that love and money are always connected. Let's say you're really working on love and like we just did last month and you're really going through the process, but all of a sudden these triggers start to show up around money or security or financial security or career. May it be jealousy of a coworker that they're outshining you, you know, on a project or whatever, or may it be something to do with something you desire financially in your life, such as, again, that example of the person who travels all the time or who's getting the awesome opportunity that you want, or maybe they're really successful in the career you want to pivot into and you're feeling that trigger of envy. It's so interesting and beautiful how the universe, even if you can't recognize that's connected to this, the universe only presents the mirrors that we're needing right now to unblock, to expand through, and to pass tests or be in our worth. And it's that simple. So I'm going to throw it over to you, Dr. Tara, to really start to break down what's happening there.
Thank you. I love the proper definition because I agree with Jessica that the terms are often used so interchangeably to the point that we may not even use the right word to describe how we're feeling. And also I love the examples because envy usually feels bad. And so it's a really great way of reframing it, that it's actually you being inspired by someone or a sort of, you know, gateway to you expanding yourself. So the science is actually super complex. The most of the research has been done on primates because they're our closest relatives. And in many ways, they live much more similarly to us than other mammals do. And so what research has shown in terms of jealousy in monkey brains is that it's associated with social pain in a certain pathway of the brain. And then basically, particularly if it's a pair bond and the male is spending time with a strange female, it massively elevates the levels of the stress hormone cortisol. If it's a jealous male, then it boosts levels of cortisol and testosterone because there'll be a more aggressive show of the jealousy than necessarily there would be in a female. And also the negative feeling that comes along with jealousy is of social rejection. So at the far end of the spectrum of human emotions, at the attachment end, we have love and trust. And where Lacey's given examples of people feeling that they may lose certain types of security, the biggest security that you can lose is love and trust and being part of a pair bond or a social group. So social rejection is super, super painful for us. And jealousy shows up as creating that feeling in our brain. In terms of envy, we do see that it plays out in a different pathway of the brain. So I think that's really interesting. It backs up what you've both said, which is that they are distinct things. And we see that love and envy are linked by the hormone that we've talked about before, oxytocin. So whereas jealousy caused cortisol in both males and females and additional testosterone in males, envy, the oxytocin level, is similar to how it is in love and bonding, but it creates a negative response. So it is underlied by bonding. Interestingly, jealousy is more related to the mood hormone serotonin. So envy seems to be more about bonding and jealousy seems to be more about pain and mood. I sort of had to research that because what most of the human research looks at is the difference between wanting and liking, and they play out in different pathways and through different hormones as well. So liking is more about dopamine. We know about the dopamine reward. And wanting is more about GABA and opioids. So it can be more related to pain. So I just thought, so interesting that it's all different pathways in the brain, different neurotransmitters, super complex. No wonder we find it hard to deal with the emotions that arise from that.
It's so interesting because just hearing that too, I'm sort of speculating that jealousy seems like such a survival-based emotion that helped us to not be rejected, to lose our spot within community. You know, it's almost like it wakes us up to action when those things start happening. So to me, I'm like, oh, of course people had that because they needed to feel a part of community or a unit or a pair, whatever that may be. Whereas as envy, I guess, as well, too, but not as clear cut as jealousy, where it's like creating the cortisol, it's creating the stress. It's really alerting your body, hey, something's not right here.
Yeah, it's almost like, I just want to take it a step further because you said, you know, it feels like it's important to your survival. But I think it actually literally was important to your survival, because if you go back to, you know, evolution, if you were excluded from the cave or you weren't contributing to the cave in terms of fertility, you know, unless you were the medicine woman, then the tribe wouldn't protect you anymore. And you literally wouldn't be able to withstand the elements or the predators if you were alone. So I feel like the envy is kind of, I could live without it, but I'd rather have it. Whereas the jealousy is, I wouldn't be able to live if I lost that thing.
There's something so interesting to be said too. Like, you know, I keep having these conversations with big experts and they all revert back to kind of the same messaging that we all learned in the 90s, which is basically like true surrender and unattachment. And we all know that that's like the ultimate evolution of consciousness. But what's so interesting, I was actually having this conversation with friends last night. I think that's where we play a really big role in manifestation for a lot of people, you know, and I've said this before on the podcast, but when people refer to, say, like Abraham Hicks and the channeling of Abraham for the law of attraction, there's a lot of gold there. But what people forget is that Abraham isn't in a body and isn't dealing with like real world issues and all the things that come up and all of the imprintation of childhood. That channeling is simply going straight to the ascension, to that ultimate space of consciousness that Eckhart talks about and Marianne talked about and Byron talked about, Katie. So it's really interesting because a lot of us, you know, we are in the real world and we are in bodies and a lot of us haven't done all of the work to reach true ascension. And we've all learned that spiritual bypassing it doesn't super work. A lot of those people I just mentioned had an enlightened experience to where they could kind of maintain that space. And I think that's where we solve a lot of problems here for people, where it's like to get to that space, there's a lot of work to be done to prime your subconscious, to really get into the flow of surrender. Because as we've evolved as a species, as humans, we have the opportunity now to work towards consciousness. But a lot of us are still in that space, that primal space of, with jealousy being a perfect example, that I could not survive. You know, if I lost this love, my heart would be so broken, I couldn't go on. However, when you start to really integrate and do the work and look at the wounds and why am I attracting this experience, et cetera, you start to evolve into a place where you're so autonomous and you're so sufficient within yourself that you no longer continue to function from that space if I were to lose this love. Because it's like, oh, if I were to lose this love, I would continue on my autonomous path. I would have heartbreak and I would have pain, but I would survive. So there's an interesting thing there to look at, like the spectrum of consciousness and evolution. And I know that's a really tangent way to go about it, but I'm often philosophizing and thinking about this, like between the space of being in 3D, in our bodies, on the material plane, and for the people who are moving into ascension and true enlightenment, there's a lot to be said for continuing to integrate deeper, to unblock deeper, to expand deeper, to reach that place of true flow. So I think these are really cool examples to see and really look at the spectrum of that.
I think it's really clear, Lacey, how much you have been philosophizing on it, because, you know, I absolutely want to back up that, you know, what modern day or social jealousy encompasses is not being killed by a saber-toothed tiger or dying of hypothermia. It's a mental construct of, I don't think I would be able to live without this. It's not the evolutionary examples of physical threats to our survival. And I think that that way of looking at it is super, super helpful for people.
And I think that's what's kind of most inspiring too about learning that these sort of emotional states are sourced at our survival state from our primate stages hundreds of thousands of years ago, and really understanding, you know, this is hardwired in us, and give yourself a break. Because so many people are like, oh, why am I so jealous of this person? I can't believe this, blah, blah, blah. Well, you didn't do anything wrong. Your brain is actually operating how it's supposed to. But now you have the opportunity to take that operating system and rewrite it and control it differently and allow yourself a bit of space so you don't default to that programming. Instead of, you know, the self-blame or the self-attack of feeling bad that you feel jealousy or envy, it's like, well, no, that's operating how it's exactly supposed to. But now that you're aware of it, you can start to break it down and create a new program in there.
I love that, but I just have to be completely pedantic and say, it's not hardwired, it's softwired. And that's where the DIs come in, that you can overwrite it. So you're absolutely right that it's programmed to do that. But I think it's really important to, you know, to bring in that element of neuroplasticity that you achieve through the DIs, which is you can choose to not default to that programming.
Just on that exact note, Dr. Tara, how important do you think, you know, like getting back into what is softwired through literal evolution, the sort of limbic operation system. So, you know, I'll take my stepmom, my ex-stepmom, for example. She was never jealous in relationship with my dad. And my dad's a very outgoing, like flirtatious, gregarious personality who didn't pose a big threat. He, you know, he's very loyal. But I really watched that and admired her in that, you know, she didn't have that reaction that a lot of us can have. And so how much do you think something like jealousy and even envy is a symptom of a childhood wound or what you were exposed to versus softwired through the limbic brain?
Wow, my like immediate reaction to that was 100%, but I need to be more balanced as a scientist, because Jessica's right that there's something in our DNA related to survival, but I would say that that is so many millennia old that it's not going to be that different from person to person, that primal response. And, you know, the pendulum swings between nature and nurture quite a lot. Obviously now epigenetics is the way that we believe it really works. So I would have to say it's much more about the effect of your environment and modeling from your parents than actual DNA, because like we agreed, it's only softwired in your brain anyway as a very, very old survival mechanism. Let's say if you'd grown up with your stepmother from the age of two, and I don't know enough about your mother to know what she was like in that way, but that would have had a very positive impact on you in terms of how you would respond to male flirtatious behavior or even predatory female behavior towards your partner. So yeah, I think it's so, so related to childhood pain and imprinting. And that's why the boundaries workshop and the shadow work and the love work works, because you can change it. You know, it could have been changed by having an unjealous mother. But if you didn't have that, then there's such an opportunity to change it.
Yeah, and that kind of brings me to sort of my next question on jealousy and just breaking that one down a bit. What are some of those, because it is into the psychology roots of what was our programming. And I think jealousy oftentimes gets associated with, for me, it always felt like a feeling of lack. I wasn't good enough, or I wasn't special enough, so I was going to lose this thing to someone else. It could present potentially as anxious attachment, unworthiness. What are some other sort of roots of jealousy and noticing that, okay, in this moment, you know, when someone's going into reprogram, okay, yes, I feel jealousy about losing this thing, but what is the core theme going on down there? Because it's probably not just that situation that they're jealous about, or that feeling of jealousy is impacting as well.
Yeah, from an energetic standpoint, here's a great example. So hormonally, I think it's hormones have played a lot into it, and certainly becoming very primitive in my behavior through pregnancy. It's the funniest joke Max and I have, because often I'll be like, are you having an affair? Are you going to have an affair? You know, things I never, ever, ever would be like before. And Max is like, oh my God, I feel like such a Casanova. I love that. Like, cause his whole day is centered around like us or gardening or, you know, working at his job. He's like, I love that you even think I can find the time for that. Like, he feels so flattered by it. And for me, I'm like, oh, it's the estrogen. But when I actually did the work on it in a DI, it all roots back down to my mom was a single mom with all of her kids. Even when she was married for a bit with her middle son, she had to work her ass off. I looked at it, or I imprinted it, that she was in prison because she was having to struggle financially, work, try to always find daycare and people to help with the kids. So to me, the thought of losing him, it came back again to security, where it's like, I'm having to really look at these triggers that are truly coming up, that really come down to abandonment, fear of all the things of being a single mom, et cetera. That's what this pregnancy is triggering inside of me. So in a way, sure, I'm sure estrogen, as it does for a lot of us while we're, you know, having PMS and we feel like we're really worthless and unworthy, you know, that week before your cycle, if things are out of whack, yes, that's playing a part. But in fact, the overarching thing that's really going on are some childhood wounds for me.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's so important to remember the correlation between hormones and emotions. You know, they're always perfectly correlated. So when you're experiencing an emotion, it could be inducing a hormonal change in you, like the research that I shared about the primates, or when you've got hormonal changes going on in your body, whether it's in your monthly cycle or during an event like pregnancy or menopause, that will bring up the emotions that match in your memory for feeling like that. So it's absolutely classic that women, you know, who didn't have the family childhood structure that you did, will become much more affectionate, maybe even a bit clingy, because it's your job at that time to make sure that the family unit stays together, because that ensures the survival of your child. But the fact that for you, it brings up a specific set of memories and emotions is, you know, there's a spectrum available for people on that. So people will rationalize that in a different way, but have the same feelings that you have.
So I'm quickly interrupting this episode in case you're hearing anything that is piquing your attention and you feel like you're ready to start your manifestation journey now. You can go ahead and use the code EXPANDED, all caps, EXPANDED, to receive $20 off your first a la carte workshop purchase, or you can try our new 3-workshop bundle for beginners, the basics bundle. If you're ready to dive right into the Pathway membership, which you've been hearing about in this episode, you can use the same code to receive your first month off. The Pathway includes every single one of our workshops, as well as our monthly class supported, where we answer the most frequently asked questions that you send in. And if you're totally new to this work, this is your first time tuning in, or you've just been interested in what you've been hearing lately, I always encourage people to go click on the link below called The Motivation. It's our portal that houses every single one of our members' manifestations that they've materialized, their testimonies, how they went about the process, and it's categorized. So whether you're looking for love, money, career, I mean, there's a slew in there of what you can find. Not to mention, you're already beginning the manifestation practice because as you read those, you're expanding. You're seeing to believe what's possible for you. And if you just want to get a taste of what the workshops are like and our deep imagining process, I suggest clicking the link below and checking out the free clarity exercise. In that exercise, you'll get a taste for our journal process, the hypnosis process, and you'll even get some aha unblocking moments. The Pathway provides the most bang for your buck with 12 months of all access to every single one of our workshops, our members-only community group, for just 12 payments of $27 per month. Again, the code is EXPANDED for $20 off any purchase or your first month. Check out the show notes to learn more about our offerings. All right, back to this episode.
You you know, we focus a lot, quite correctly, on parental modeling and, you know, love from the caregivers and how that sets up both good beliefs, but also a lot of, you know, pain, shame and guilt. But in this episode, particularly on jealousy and envy, I think it's really important to talk about the psychology of sibling rivalry, because that isn't really acknowledged enough. And just picking up a little bit on the story that, you know, you said with all your siblings and, you know, your mother being on her own, that we know that particularly after the agricultural revolution, people started having more children because they needed more people in the family to work. In a way, humanity made a bit of a mistake, because if we had stayed with having less children, you wouldn't have had to produce so much to feed the family. And then things like hygiene and resources would have been ample. And so siblings literally competed for resources when resources were scarce. And I'm talking about basic resources like food and water and health. So, you know, there's a legacy of that as well that creates our jealousy patterns and envy patterns.
Oh, this is so fascinating. I'm like, let's dig into this a little. As someone who also didn't really have siblings for the first 13 years of my life, I'm so fascinated by this. So before the agricultural revolution, and let's just like get back again into Paleolithic or beyond that, what sort of was the average offspring, like amount of children that were had?
I don't know the actual number that people had. But what we do know is that to ensure the survival of one alpha male's genes, he had to impregnate four or five women. So the survival rate was one in four or five. And, you know, just child survival rate and maternal survival rates were horrendously low. That's improved time and time again throughout history. And the reason I mentioned the agricultural revolution is that because it improved a lot of things like health and nutrition and just the way that societies were organized, but it led to the ability and the desire for a different reason to have more children. So, you know, more of them survived, but, you know, whereas before there was more of a natural selection, like because of hypothermia or animal predators or, you know, complications during childbirth, that children wouldn't survive as much. As we became more modernized, they survived more and people thought it was a really great idea to have more so that they could start working on the fields. But it actually perpetuated a problem, which was that then you had to generate more and more resources to just feed the family. They changed for so many reasons, because obviously then like later contraception would have changed it, and just social norms change as well, or are different in different cultures. But there was a definite decision in the modern society around the agricultural revolution that having more children was a good thing.
It's so interesting tying back to the sibling rivalry, because something that comes up for me a lot is, you know, I look at the modeling of, say, like Weston Price really suggests nutritionally replenishing your body at least for 2 years post-birth before having another child. That was something that was very common in indigenous cultures, just like tending to the land and getting the soil highly nutritious beforehand. But I look at someone like my mom's side of the family, very Irish American. So five girls, I think she lost one child, but five girls all under 2 years apart, my mom being the last, and a lot of dysfunction because my grandfather was an alcoholic and like progressively getting worse as the children kept coming. The first three he was pretty solid for, and then I think kind of died off in the last two. But, you know, I'm always constantly from the lens of TBM work being like, what is the healthiest psychological model? When's the right time to bring in a sibling? And I don't care what people say, because I even feel this with my dogs. You have not preference over your children, but you have more compatibility with some than others. You know, there are things like that that I notice and witness that, again, not all of us have reached that transcendental space of consciousness. So yeah, looking at it from that space, all of the things that can play into sibling rivalry, something of which I've never really experienced, because again, I was an only child until 13. And at that age, when my first brother came, I kind of felt like a second mom. Yeah, I'm just curious about all of that. It's a really, because Jessica, you have a close sister. I don't know about you, Dr. Tara, but this is something to dig into.
Yeah, well, I was actually going to say, so I'm 8 years apart from my sister.
Oh.
So It's interesting. My mom had a lot of siblings. She had three brothers, and her mother also had a few miscarriages. So they had a rather big family. And I remember her saying, like, you know, I can't believe like one box of pasta used to feed our whole family. And now, you know, the three of us are eating it quite quickly and just going through that like disparage of resources. But I was, you know, an only child for 8 years. And so a lot of my roots, even in jealousy, was like first going to school and having a best friend and not wanting to lose that best friend because I didn't have a friend at home. So having a friend at school was so important to me. And I had anxious attachment and I was like, oh, if this friend leaves, I'm never going to have another best friend. And so I fixated on wanting to keep that best friend close. And it was something I actually unblocked through the TBM work, realizing like, oh, I just wanted like a buddy with me at home. And I think my, you know, soul wanted my sister maybe a few years earlier so we could hang out and like do things at home together. But, you know, everything happens in divine timing. But it was interesting because it felt like I moved from being an only child to a sibling, but I was so much older that I felt like a teacher to her as well. So even with not having a sibling there, it's interesting what that roots in you and what that programs in you for jealousy or envy.
So I have the shortest gap then at 5.5 years, and my brother's 5.5 years younger than me. And I was obviously old enough to completely understand what was going on. And, you know, my parents made me really excited about it. But interestingly, my father hadn't wanted to have another child. And it took my mother 5 years to kind of persuade him that this was the best thing that he could do for me. And my mom definitely said that my brother used to kind of like push me off her lap when you know, he wanted to get all the cuddles. I think as an older sibling, there's definitely a period of your life where you feel like you would chop your head off for that person. You just love them so much. So sibling rivalry was, I wouldn't have been able to compute that in my brain, but it's definitely a thing. And, you know, this came out as a joke, like years and years later. I mean, we were adults, but there were two brothers that were politicians in the UK, and they both competed to become the leader of one of the political parties. And the younger brother won, and it was the front page news, and it said something like younger sibling ousts, you know, older sibling from the throne of power or something. And my brother sent it to me as a text message. And I remember thinking it was really funny, but then kind of thinking there's always some truth in a jest, you know, and kind of probably that was the first time I realized that there might be a bit of that between us. But I also remember my nephew, and he had a 5-year age gap too. So he had a little brother come along. When he was about 7, he had a friend that came to play who was an only child. And so my sister-in-law and everyone was saying, oh, you know, poor him. He's an only child. Like, you've got to be nice to him. And my nephew said, I wish I was an only child.
Yeah, I'm so curious about what the right move is. I have another friend's mom who said the best gift you can ever give to a child is a sibling. But is that always the case?
I have a few friends who decided not to have a second one for, like, you know, really good reasons. And I think then that you have to be, you know, where I've seen it work successfully is like have a really open home and make sure they have lots of friends who can come and stay. And, you know, if they've got cousins the same age, I think cousins are a really special thing as well. So I think, you know, you're right, Lacey, that there are some physical factors, but it's how you deal with it, isn't it? It's what you make of it that's so important.
I'm also curious too, you know, this might be a quick tangent, but Daniel's a twin and they have lots of competition between the two. They're very similar in their interests and very dissimilar in a lot of other ways. But when their interests overlaps, it also causes them to sort of go for the same jobs or want to live in the same city, or, and then that built-in competition's there. So any insight on twin jealousy? It must be more intense.
The funny thing about twins is that there is technically an older one, although you could absolutely argue that that doesn't count at all. And I'm not sure if it's always the older one in, you know, quote marks, but there's definitely a dominant twin. And apparently this is a bit of an issue. I only found out about it quite recently because I have some friends who are twins. And I said to one of them, is she older? And she said, yes, but she looked at me really quizzically and said, like, 9 minutes. I mean, that's not an explanation for anything. So I think, yeah, there's a special kind of I'm sure, huge, you know, closeness, perhaps even if they're not identical, more than just normal siblings. But I think probably a bigger sibling rivalry as well. You know, if that had happened in times before there was proper health and hygiene. So there's two things. One is that twins do compete for resources in the womb. So there's often a smaller twin. And by the time they grow enough to be like filling up the space, there's often the smaller one has scoliosis of the spine. So they end up shorter in real life as well, even if they're identical twins. And then even if you think about like animals that have, you know, litters of two or just twins in times where resources were scarce, they would absolutely have competed for resources and possibly to the extent that the smaller one would have died. So that's probably why there's a thing.
Interesting. Interesting. Oh boy, I have to relay the information back to them.
You're like, so Daniel, which one of you were the runt? No, I'm kidding.
Who was a little bit taller and who was a little bit older? Oh, very interesting. And then let's kind of pivot to envy a bit. So being envious of that your friend found their person, that someone had a huge career win, someone has a lifestyle you desire. And what is sort of some of the roots of that envy? Is that all of our shadow? Is that just needing expansion? Like, what are some of those roots that are playing out there?
I'll let you go, Dr. Tara, because I feel like the science there is, I mean, just like simple psychology, it just seems that it combats so much inside of us.
I mean, as we've defined it, it's somebody else having something that you would like. And I think it's hugely to do with mindset because it's not as survival as everything else that we've discussed to this point. It's more about my life would be better rather than my life would be over. And so therein lies the choice. And it comes back to everything that, you know, we've all said, which is some primal responses, some of the imprinting that you've had in childhood, and some of your ability to overwrite it with neuroplasticity, depending on how much personal development work you've done. That's where, you know, I feel it's all about an abundant mindset rather than a scarcity mindset. Because let's say I look at you, Jessica, and think, okay, you know, she lives in California. I really wish I lived in California. Well, it doesn't make any difference that you live there. That doesn't mean that I can't live there. And that's a very, very simplistic example, but maybe a better one is that somebody started up their own business and I'm stuck in a salaried job and I wish I have this dream to start up my own business. It may be a little bit more nuanced there about how competitive that field is, you know, whether there really are enough resources for everyone. But, you know, your belief in yourself, your decision to see that person as an expander creates resources for yourself. Your belief that you won't be able to do it and that the fact that she's got it means you have less chance means, you know, it won't succeed. So as much as the power of our thoughts and our beliefs contribute to that, we're responsible for changing those.
Yeah. And on an energetic level, let's take the example of the person on Instagram who you see and they're traveling 360 days of the year, you know, or some other version of Instagram that's triggering you as it does probably on a daily basis for this exact energetic of envy. You wouldn't have that triggered feeling. This is so key in spotting why it's an expander of yours if you didn't identify with them. So plenty of people are vanners on Instagram or traveling 360 days of the year, and not all of them trigger you. But when that one particular person does, it's because there's something about them that you identify with. And as we know about expanders, it's so pertinent that you identify with where they were and now where they've gone. That's how you know you found an expander. When you're feeling that trigger of envy, it's because you identify with them. So it's literally the universe being like, here's a gift. Here's an expander, you know, and just remembering that plenty of people are getting probably the promotion or career win that person has received, and they don't trigger you. It does with that person. So that's a really, really key thing of this reframing process and also being so grateful to be triggered in this way, because especially for the people that ever write in and they're like, I can't find expanders and I live in a small town and X, Y, and Z. And it's like, mm-mm. Just get on Instagram. You'll start to find some expanders. Yeah. Or TikTok or Clubhouse or whatever the thing is right now.
Well, and I think that's so interesting too, because I think when a lot of times, especially if you're very triggered by, you know, the person, or you're very envious, let's say, by the person, and let's say you have low self-confidence or you feel unworthy, you don't see how they are highlighting a part of you. And that's where that shadow work comes in, because you're not recognizing that they are showing you a part of you that's already in you. And that's kind of the exciting part, because you're like, oh, this person is so much better. There's so much better life, this, that. They have all these things, check all the boxes. And you don't recognize, like, it's only bothering you because you're suppressing those parts that you could shine about yourself.
And you're capable. You're capable of the same thing.
Exactly.
All the way.
There's something that Lacey said a couple of episodes ago that I really want to repeat, because as you know, neuroscience is all about repetition and emotional intensity. And it had a, you know, it had a really big impact on me, but you said it so in passing, I'm not even sure people would remember that you said it. And it was whenever I stop, it was either, you know, comparing myself to someone else or, you know, trying to achieve what someone else has achieved, I outperform myself. I loved that. And I think it's so relevant to envy, because envy can take you down the road of looking at exactly what that person's done and wishing that you had it or trying to emulate it. Whereas what you need to do is say, what's my best version of that thing? How could I do that thing in a way that's authentic to me? And then I think, you know, Lacey's right that you then outperform. And you, as you said, it's not about outperforming the other person. It's that you outperform what you would have done if it hadn't been for that person.
Yeah, and that's a key thing, you know, in the blog post that we have on envy from the past that I wrote years ago, like journaling and breaking down the experience, you know, first is feeling your feelings, and then you start to go through this sort of journaling process and going back to the whole, the person maybe who's traveling and you're seeing that and you're not in that current opportunity, having you go through this work, you're looking at it and you're going, what is my soul desiring about that traveling? And for some, it could be freedom. It could be experience. It could be whatever. Let's go with the freedom one. So when you look at that and you go, where do I not have freedom in my life right now that my soul desires? So it could ultimately be not much about the traveling itself. And it's exactly what Dr. Tara is bringing back up, that your soul is shouting that it needs more freedom, it needs more space, and looking at the ways you want that in your life, and then how to start to call it in because your expander is showing you that it's possible. So there's kind of this whole breakdown into it. And I think you just brought up, you re-brought up such an important highlight of this process when you are triggered by envy, really understanding what it is about your soul that desires what that is that somebody else has or is successful in or is doing, because that's where you're going to find the fast track, just like Dr. Tara said, to outperform it, to get it quicker, to have your best version of whatever that is.
Do you guys, in sort of like a round table format, do you guys have an example of someone that you felt envious with that you turned into expansion?
I'll take one of them. So there's this one woman that I was very triggered by a couple of years ago. She hit on every primal thing that I think most people struggle with. She's so stunningly beautiful. She was working on such cool abstract projects, and she comes from like tremendous wealth. So she like had what society deems as being a lot of the things that a lot of us are programmed to chase after. And so when I started to do the work on the envy around her, I realized, oh, and it was actually, it's really what helped me like find more of my authentic code. So it was like, I desire the freedom financially to have luxury and quality and do what I love. And I desire her ability to have total freedom of her life. So she doesn't have to do a job just for survival or et cetera. She has all of the space to create in the way she wants. And that's back when I was acting. And so now, like, if you look at this brand, it's a representation of all of the things I love to do. You know, it's that space and I get to express freely in it. And then also looking, you know, like at the beauty, it showed me, it reflected back to me where I had a lot of self-image and body worth and all of that good stuff to work through and continue to work through. So I was able to look at that experience as such a layered expander. And now, due to her, she literally showed me through Seeing to Believe that I could have all of that. And so I feel very much like there's no trigger there. She's actually a good friend today and stuff. And I look at her and I'm like, wow, that's so cool. And it gets back to just what Dr. Tara was saying. We're living two completely different types of paths, but I have my own awesome version of it that continues to grow in all of the witch ways that she showed me that was possible.
I actually want to share a really interesting insight that I had by doing the shadow, unblock shadow. You know, I alluded to kind of, you know, half in joke, the sibling rivalry thing. I think there was a lot more to that than I ever recognized. And I think because of that, I threw it into my shadow. So I've always prided myself on being the kind of person that I could never be jealous of my friends. I couldn't understand how you could be jealous of somebody who you like or love or... And so I really struggled with the notion that anybody might be jealous of me. And I found it incredibly hurtful. And to be honest, I always just thought it couldn't possibly be true. So when I did the shadow, unblocked shadow, I realized that I was just in denial and I'd thrown that into my shadow. And so actually in the last year or so, I've been kind of doing what Jessica said before, which is saying, this is a normal reaction. It's actually okay to feel it sometimes. And then it's how, you know, how you just said, Lacey, how you reframe it, what you do with it. And I think the shadow work and the sort of daily reprogramming is really important for that. But like when I described shadow once on Instagram, I said that people with low self-esteem can actually throw the good things about them into their shadow because they can't, you know, take a compliment or whatever. It's just been so eye-opening for me to see that I'd completely thrown that into my shadow and denied that it was a thing. But of course, it's such a basic human primal thing. Maybe, you know, that's a more unusual version of the story. But for me, it's been a massive insight.
That acknowledgement piece and really feeling what that feels like to feel it expressed when it's in your shadow is so powerful.
Mm.
On a weird astrological note with that too, Dr. Tara, being a Leo rising, there is nothing more painful to me because I am so extremely loyal. There is nothing more painful for me than somebody who I've let close to me who doesn't want the best for me. That's the quickest you will see yourself out of my life and never back in again. And that's my own shit I need to work through.
Yeah.
Or if you take advantage of me, those are the two things. And it must be a Leo thing.
Yeah, I think it is quite a lot. And I think because I'm Scorpio rising that the, you know, the hidden aspects are quite a big part of me as well. So it's easier to throw it into the shadow than throw that person out of your life.
Totally.
I love that though, that you reframe it to the shadow versus the action of throwing them out of your life though.
It's so cutthroat. It's bad. I need to work through that. There's only been one person who's ever been able to get back in too. Otherwise, they say this actually, there was this astrology book I read once, and even as an Aquarius, it's like they're your biggest cheerleader. They're so loyal. They're so happy to be around you. But the moment that you... And that's such a simple human nature, you know, to not want the best for somebody again, just through the simplicity of someone's own childhood wounding, such as, you know, jealousy or envy that they're experiencing. But it said, like, all you'll see is the back of their head walking out of your life and will never walk back in. So I have some work to do there for sure.
But it is protecting you, you know, it's allowing the space in which you can be generous and loving and affectionate to be with people that you feel safe around.
It's all safety. Yeah, it really is.
Yeah. And it's the balance of having the boundaries as well.
Exactly. Yeah, I agree.
So we're all for you. We're behind you.
No, we're in front. We're not behind, Dr. Tara. That's the bad spot. Yeah. So I had one example too that I think might be helpful because it was around career stuff. And I remember when I was first starting out in television and film, and there was this one young girl who was even younger than I was. She was an assistant at an agency and sold her own script, and then they were making it on TV, and she was working with like the network and the production company I wanted to work with. And I remember being so triggered. I was like, how could she get that? I can't believe this. Like, she's so young. And I think the thing that hit on the most to me was she didn't follow the steps. Like, you're supposed to be an assistant and then an assistant's assistant, and then you can work at a production company, and then you can do this. Like, there was so much programming of the hierarchy of film and television and what I needed to do in order to do those things. But she wound up being such an excellent expander because, A, she showed me, fuck the steps. If you want to make something, like, make something and just try it. Why not? And also that you don't have to be a lot for television, a 40, 50-year-old white male to showrun a show. You can be a young person who maybe this is their first show ever doing it and direct and run everything and you're so capable. And she really documented, you know, what was going on behind the scenes and all of that. And so I would say within a year of watching her and understanding that she was really expanding me and breaking a lot of these limiting beliefs for me, at the job I was with, I wound up directing and essentially show running a bunch of projects for them. So now I was doing the thing that I thought I was, you know, 5-10 years away from doing, and then, you know, went on to show run music videos and things like that. So it was so pivotal that I didn't just become triggered by her and shut her away.
Or bitter.
Yeah, you know, sometimes it might be like, oh, I have to unfollow because it's too much. And that might be the remedy depending upon your case if it is really way too activating for you. But if you can stomach it, I would implore you to continue on to see what lesson you have to learn from that person.
Yeah, I agree with that too. It is important to feel your feelings and protect yourself through the process. But if you are like doing the work to unblock, to expand, to reframe, usually within like a month or two, you'll hit a stride where you're like, oh, rock on. That's great. You know, however it presents for you. But it is good to take those steps to make sure you're not just like spinning out all the time.
Okay. And one last question on this, and this has just been popping in my mind the entire time. Can you be both jealous and envious of the same person?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
So what does that look like?
Could look like that woman I was talking about, and all of a sudden now I'm with Max, and because of my own childhood trauma, the whole time I'm like, maybe Max and I are courting, say they're friends, I could be like, he would leave me for her. So it could look like that. It could look like many different ways, but that's just an example that comes to mind.
So there's a lot of unblocking to do when you have the envy and jealousy simultaneously.
Oh, yeah. And I honestly, like, I know we say this all the time and it's probably glazed over, but if you are being triggered in your daily life, you're so lucky. The universe is literally putting in front of you exactly what you need to work through to ascend to the next, you know, step. So don't take it lightly when you are triggered. And the other thing I want to say on that too is triggers come with patterning. So it's like where you tend to be triggered in one spot, you're probably triggered maybe in different scenarios, but the same root is going on. You know, I worked through one, I've been talking about this very openly through the process, but how troublesome it's been for us, like working with different contractors and other people who are helping in the projects, you know, say it's the person I'm sourcing appliances from, or there was this one woman on Etsy that I was about to buy this vintage medicine cabinet that was overpriced. And I was happy to pay her shipping because it actually was the only thing that fit perfectly. And she called us and she was so rude to us. And Max just said, you just lost a sale. Goodbye. And that's us passing a test, being like, universe, you'll show us something better. So I had to really sit down and like deconstruct, well, how am I attracting like such bullying, non-accountability, aggressive energy? And looking at all of that, when you get down to the full patterning at the very bottom, it's because the same way I was a doormat in relationships or money, I had been not following this process in an effort to get this project done sooner because there's all of these X, Y, and Z exterior reasons. The baby's coming. You know, before when I was having issues, it was like my old lack programming that I didn't want to overspend on anything. And that's, thank God, been resolved. And the third being that I just have to deal with this. This is how it is. And I have one expander, Sydney, who was on our podcast, who had the most excellent experience building her house out in Maine that she totally manifested from scratch, that she was very, if anybody hasn't listened to that process episode, she was very transparent in how she found the financing and everything to do that. So I say all of this on a tangent because all of those things are connected. All of those triggers root back down to some very specific things I have to work through. So if you're lucky enough to be triggered in your life right now, it's because your manifestation wants to come through use the energy, do the daily practice. It is so lucky to have that blueprint.
Yeah, I think that's really exciting and empowering, and I can't wait to dive into. I almost want to like go on Instagram now and see who triggers me so I can like start my homework.
You're like, wow, I'm going to Europe in a few weeks from all the stuff you're seeing.
Oh my gosh. Well, one little closing exercise that people can do at home, and we have this in the NV blog post, which we'll link as well. But like Lacey said, start writing out the reasons you're feeling envious of a person. What is making you feel so bad? The first answer might not be your root, so keep digging. What do they have that you want? And list out the reasons why you feel you can't achieve them or have these blocks. We will link this in the show notes as well. And then take it through a DI.
Like the one we created for this month.
Yes. So excited to announce this one, but we have a NV DI that really hits on these energetics and allow you to sort of play with this person and how they are helping expand you. So yeah, hopefully that helps. That's your NV homework for the week. And thank you, Lacey and Dr. Tara. This has been a very expansive episode as always.
Thank you, Jessica. You're so good at breaking things down for us. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Happy to help. Happy to help. All right. Thanks, everyone. See you next week.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye, everyone.
If you enjoyed this episode, definitely send it to the friend, the family member, whoever out there could benefit. That's how I garner a lot of my information, are when friends shoot over a really profound episode they've heard somewhere to me. I also want to encourage you, if you want to be entered to win a 1-year membership to The Pathway, go and leave a 5-star podcast review. We've been announcing some really cool ones and reading them off, and it's been pretty profound how already those pathway memberships have been super instrumental to the people who have won them. We'll choose a new winner each month, so listen in here at the end of the episode to hear if you've won. And in an effort to make sure to have representation in this process series, go ahead and submit any process testimonials you have, especially to our LGBTQ+ community, our BIPOC, as well as the WISE, which is anyone in the community who is 45 and over. All right, we'll be back next week.